Seen you locked and changed, didn't ease my pain. Left me feeling ashamed out in the rain. Can't explain the pain, how I stay sane. Don't like the game, will it ever change? Welcome to another Resilient Stories podcast, where we share the grit and glory behind the stories of amazing people like you who have bounced back from failure and adversity to go and live their best lives on purpose. Today's show is being sponsored by Million Dollar Business Pathway, where we believe everyone has a story to tell and to sell. If you want to learn how to tell and sell your story, go to tawatson.com under the Programs and Products page. Click on Million Dollar Business Pathway to get yourself started, and you'll have a great time. So, folks, are you guys ready for another amazing episode today? Joining me, I have my friend from many, many years, the one and only Dr. Jermaine Davis. Good to see you, brother.
Welcome. Good to see the show. You too. Yes, congratulations.
Hey, appreciate that, man. You know, and it's been many years since we've crossed paths, man, but it's great to see you as being identified as doctor now, man. I'm honored to be able to call you that, brother.
You too, man. You too.
Hey, so for our listening audience who may not necessarily be familiar with you, just introduce yourself and any latest that's going on with you.
You know, my name is Dr. Jermaine Davis, and I am a communication and leadership professor at Century College and St. Kate's University in the Twin Cities. I write books.
A lot of my audience may not know where Twin Cities is at.
That's right. Yeah. I'm sorry. Twin Cities, yeah. Minneapolis, St. Paul.
Yes.
But I would be remiss. I am a native of Chicago, but this is home town, now.
Right.
Chi-town. Anyhow, I've written 10 books, and I have two books coming out. One is called Breaking the Cycle, which talks about my life, and then one is my passion around teaching leaders how to communicate and lead more effectively. So I have a book coming out called Influencing Up, Down, and Across Your Organization.
Wow, that sounds phenomenal, man. That is amazing. I can't wait to see that. So if people want to get a hold of you, what's the best way to contact you?
You know, you can email me, Jermaine@JermaineDavis.com. You can go to my website, JermaineDavis.com. And from there, it'll connect you with all my social media platforms.
Man, that's awesome. He made it very easy for you to get a hold of him, folks out there. Definitely get one of those 10 books. Follow him if you're looking for a great speaker, coach, man, or consultant. You got to tap into my man, Dr. Jermaine Davis. So Dr. Davis, you know, the purpose of our podcast is really to introduce our audience to successful people like yourself, and have you talk us through one of your most difficult times in your life and give our audience a chance to kind of get a blueprint in terms of what they can do to overcome obstacles they may be facing that may be similar or different in the past or present or even in the future. So I'm gonna start with my first question. What's been the biggest obstacle you've had to overcome in life, personally or professionally?
The biggest obstacle I feel like I've had to overcome is not to fall into a negative cycle that was reflected in my family and in the community that I grew up in, right? Okay. So there's many different incidents that I can point to, but there was a collective mindset and practice in my family. After my grandfather was murdered, It created a negative impact.
Yeah, so tell us more about that. I mean, and again, I appreciate your honesty, man, and transparency about this. The murder of your grandfather, you know, because you think about our grandparents, we don't necessarily think of our grandparents being murdered. So tell us a little bit about that. Yeah.
Well, let me give you context to the Davis family. So I grew up on the west side of Chicago, and my uncles primarily were known as the Davis Hustlers. Okay. So let me give you context. On the west side of Chicago, there's a part of Chicago where Jewish immigrants settled, and they would set up wholesale companies.
Okay.
And so my uncles would go there and they would buy what they call merch, which is also known as merchandise. So they would buy socks wholesales, women's pantyhose, incense, cigarette lighters, girls' hair accessories, bath towels. So they would buy these products wholesale, and then they would take them back to a predominantly African-American community and sell them at retail. Mm. And so that they had customers. So I grew up in a family where I saw entrepreneurialism being modeled to me. However, the patriarch of my family was my grandfather. And when he was murdered when I was about six, you know, when you think about dealing and coping with stress.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, my uncles and some of the women in my family, they coped with a negative or unhealthy way of coping. So they did it with crack. So they was practicing escapism and they were self-medicating themselves. So it was with crack, alcohol, and heroin.
Yeah.
So these very same people that I looked up to, that I admire, I mean, I still love them, but I start to see them now go in and out of jail, in and out of prison, and then whatever the impacts of what drugs make you do, right? You start to steal from your family, you start to distance yourself. So that was the biggest thing, not to become what I saw modeled to me.
Yeah. So what led up to your grandfather being murdered?
Yep. So my grandfather and my grandmother, they were separated, right? So my grandfather had a girlfriend, and from what I was told, because I was younger, they argued a lot. Now, this is ironic because I'm a communications professor, right? And I always say conflict is never the problem. It's how you deal with the conflict, right? So you're going to have disagreements, but how you deal with it.
Right.
So I was told that they were arguing and she took a letter opener and stabbed him in the heart 7 times.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
So I remember when I was younger, going to the court trial, you know, I remember going to the funeral. And like I said, what stuck with me was how people in my family dealt with that pain, that tragedy.
Yeah. And you know what, I appreciate your honesty around this whole ordeal. So as you grew up on the west side of Chicago, I mean, you're dealing with this issue, grandfather being murdered, you're seeing murders take place in the streets of Chicago as well.
Absolutely.
I think we're around the same age, so we got a chance to see the crack epidemic take place in our community as well, man. What were the feelings that you were dealing with as you're watching this chaos take place around you, man? What are some of the emotions you were dealing with, man?
Right.
You're watching all this stuff happen inside the household and outside the household. What was going on with you emotionally?
Well, you know what's really interesting? You always had people in the neighborhood, even though we didn't have a lot of wealth, there were people who wanted to steer the young people in the right way. So I grew up in a community around two big gangs, Vice Lords, and at that time they were called Black Gangster Disciples before they broke up into two factions, right? And so at that time, even the older guys that were into gangs, they would say, hey, young bro, you gotta go to school, right? Wow. And when the drama was about to happen, they would say, hey, go in the house, it's about to go down, go in the house.
Wow.
So I grew up where people were living a criminal life, but it's almost like they still had these levels of morals.
Absolutely.
And ethics.
Yeah.
And they looked out for the young people. However, I begin to see how sometimes they would recruit the young people, right? Because, you know, you want numbers.
Right.
And so because I play sports, Tommy, right? I play basketball. Mm-hmm. So the drug dealers and the gang leaders, they left me alone because it was me and about 4 of my buddies around my age. They called the young brothers. They let the young brothers hoop with them.
Okay.
Right? Because we showed promise.
Uh-huh.
And so they left me alone. So when I was over here, the Vice Lords would say, they call me JD in Chicago, Jermaine Davis. JD, if anybody mess with you, let us know. We got it.
Okay.
I go around to GD, same thing. JD, anybody mess with you, let us know. So I kind of had this protection.
Yeah.
But it was still rough because you heard the gunshots.
Yeah.
And I saw the drug deals. So it was commotion. And my mother was like, I don't want to lose you to the streets. I don't want to lose my baby to the streets.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, when you're young, you want acceptance from your friends. And of course, you want the love from your parents and your family members. But you're hiding part of yourself because you know some of the practices that your friends are doing is unacceptable according to your family standards. But I got to tell you, my mother and my uncles were on me.
Wow.
So even in their addiction, they were like, nah, bro, you're not getting caught up. You're going to college.
Wow.
Right? So it was like a standard set.
Yeah.
You know, stuff might be messed up. Stuff might be effed up.
Yeah.
But you're going to break the cycle. Somebody in the family got to break the cycle.
Wow. So, I mean, that's pretty amazing. So were you the first one to go to college in your family?
No, you know, here's what's interesting. I wasn't the first one to go to college. I tell this story in my book, Breaking the Cycle. I remember my mother went to Malcolm X Junior College. That's what they called
really?
It at the time.
Really?
And
okay.
Yeah, and I remember she didn't have a babysitter, but she would take me to class.
Uh-huh.
So she would have me sitting on one knee, holding me while she was taking notes in class.
Wow.
And so I remembered that, right?
Wow.
And so a couple of my uncles went, but they, I always say that they didn't finish what they started.
Wow. Right?
But well, yeah, but I was the first one who graduated.
Wow, she sounds like an amazing person though, you as well. So, I mean, but you and I know, growing up in that environment, even with those protective mechanisms, it still comes down to a matter of choice.
Yes. Right?
Because we know friends who made different choices though. What Absolutely. Kept you from making the choice to do some of the negative things and develop the negative mindset that was taking place with others? Now, what kept you from doing that?
You know, I honestly, the number one thing, I had a healthy fear of my mother.
Okay, that's good.
And I know people, you know, they went in opposite directions, but Carol and Charmaine Davis didn't play. And, you know, my mother, when I came home from school, she would talk to me. And wow. It was like, she used the power of repetition. Mm. Baby, I don't want you to get caught up. I want you to do something with your life. And I understand sometimes the gravitational pull is so strong that sometimes people give in. And I will tell you this, my mother and my uncles, but going to high school downtown Chicago and then getting a job on Michigan Avenue as a teenager in a clothing store. When I traveled downtown, Tommy, and I was on Michigan Avenue and State Street, I used to see all these business people in their suits, in their attaché cases. And I was like, man, I want to live in one of these high rises one day.
Yes.
And so this was my opportunity to get out of the hood.
Mm-hmm.
And so what I found, most of my friends only stayed within the 10 block radius.
Mm-hmm.
So I was getting out of the hood or out of that environment, and it expanded my horizons.
Yes.
So
yes.
I saw potentials and possibilities.
Yes.
And so that all of that played a role into me seeing something different.
Well, that's powerful. You know, what would you say was the best advice that you received in terms of not staying there, not giving into the temptations, not becoming another statistic? Did someone give you some, I mean, what was the best advice you received from a mentor or a guide or your mother, whomever it may be?
You know, my mother used to tell me this. She used to say that your audio needs to match your video.
Mm-hmm.
And if you want to do something with your life, say it, then do it.
Yes.
Right? And so that stuck with me. And she would say, JD, does your audio match your video?
Mm.
You're talking about this, but you're doing something completely different.
Right.
So that helped me. You know, I started to think about how do I position myself for success? And I wanted to make my mother proud.
Yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I had my younger brother, Greg, and my little sister, Katrina. Then also I had this mantle that I want to break the cycle for them. I want to lead by example. So I took on that mantle. But I'll tell you the biggest thing. Remember when I told you that my uncle started going in and out of jail and prison?
Absolutely.
My mother was a phenomenal sibling. I remember we would go to, on 26th in California, if people know that area in Chicago, that's where the Cook County Jail is.
Hmm.
We would go every week to see one of my uncles.
Wow.
And I got to tell you, this played a role. So, you know, you're getting ready and you're waiting, and then you hear them call your family member's name, and then you hear that increased heart palpitation. You're so excited. I'm so excited to see my Uncle Dinky, my Uncle Ricky. And then they come, and then as they're walking, that big thick glass, and they will always hold their hand up, like touching, right?
Yeah.
And then you get on the phone, and I would be so bashful, Dr. Watson, because I'm like, oh, there's my uncle. There's one of my favorite uncles.
Mm.
But let me tell you what would destroy me. When they were like, okay, time to go.
Yeah.
And then, you know, my uncles, you know, they would say, hey, you stay out these streets. You don't want to be in here.
Mm.
And when we would leave, man, that would destroy me from the inside out. Yeah. But my mother would say, JD, I hope I never have to come visit you here.
Wow.
And when I'm young, I'm like, Mom, I promise you, I'm not. She would say, JD, do not come here, baby. This is not meant for human beings.
Yeah.
You know, wow. And that played a role, man.
Absolutely.
That really played a role for me.
Wow, that is phenomenal. Your mom sounds like an absolutely amazing woman. You know, I mean, shout out to her. How would you say this whole environment and ordeal kind of shaped you, man, as a person? Man, how did all this stuff shape you as a person?
You know, I in my family, there's a lot of sayings. And so my Uncle Ricky used to say this, JD, you got to shuffle your feet and try to make a beat.
Mm.
No feet don't eat. Mm. Like, we always had these sayings.
Yeah.
So even though they would be in and out of jail, one could argue that they weren't practicing what they were preaching, but they were still sharing things to me that I took to heart. So what came to me is, I'm gonna stand tall. Yeah. So I had the opportunities. You know, my homies was selling drugs.
Yep.
Man, JD, even when I was in college, one of my really good friends, he sold drugs and he had about like 10 cars on the west side of Chicago.
Yeah, wow.
And I'll never forget it. I was in college and I was working at Keebler Cookies and Crackers, right? I was a marketing intern.
Okay.
And I had this old beat up car and all of a sudden I hear somebody say, JD, what's up, my N-word? I look up. It's like, oh man, where you been? He said, man, I've been locked up. He said, hey man, look at you, look like a little preppy college boy. You know, I had on my slacks, my little sweater and everything.
Right.
And I'll never forget he said this to me. He said, hey man, I need somebody like you on my team.
Wow.
I said, what you talking about? He said, man, I need somebody like you on my team. You smart, you intelligent. Tell you what, JD, what's your tuition? So he pulls out this big bankroll.
Wow.
He says, how much your tuition? So my grandmother lived on the third floor. He says, how much Miss Davis need? You want me to pay her rent for 2 years? What you need, bro? I need somebody like you on my team.
Mm.
And I said, nah, man, I'm good. He's like, oh, come on, man, you lame. I said, nah, bro, I'm good. Now I want to say this. Is it tempting? Hell yes.
Uh-huh.
When you're in a struggle, and you thinking they're making fast money versus slow money, the temptation is huge, man. But I remember what my mom said. And for me, I never wanted my mother to come see me in jail, man.
Right, that's right.
I wanted her to come see me at my speeches.
That's right.
Right, my presentations. Like, that's what I want, right? And so for me, I stuck to that.
Yeah.
That struggle between slow money and fast money, when you're in a struggle, and you're not seeing your dreams come to fruition.
Absolutely.
I understand how sometimes people compromise.
Absolutely.
Right.
Absolutely. And very well said. You know, so as you look back today, man, on your journey, and congratulations as well, and appreciate your honesty.
Yeah.
Would you do anything differently?
Yeah, you know what? I would. Let me tell you what at that period, I was trying to move back to Chicago after I finished graduate school. I was trying to move back to Chicago. And I went home for a week and I told my uncle, I told my grandmother, and I told my mother. I said, you know what? I think I'm gonna come back to Chicago.
Mm.
And everyone except my mother said, don't come back.
Mm.
And at this time, there was a slang term called burn up.
Mm.
It's burn up here, man. Don't come back.
Uh-huh.
Which means that it's nothing really happening positive in the immediate community. Don't come back.
Yeah.
You're doing well where you are, JD. Don't come back.
Yeah.
Sometimes when I look back, I wonder if I should have given it a try. But I understand where they were coming from. Because where I grew up, it was a lot of young women and men who were getting sucked in.
Yeah.
And then if they didn't join gangs or sell drugs, it was just, they were getting by. They were in survival mode.
Yeah.
And so now when I look back, they were saying, don't just survive, thrive.
Absolutely.
So when I look back sometimes, I wonder, you know, could I have made some differences in Chicago?
Mm-hmm.
Should I have given it a shot there?
Uh-huh.
And so, I mean, I'll never know the answer, but I just want to be transparent. I do think about it and I do wonder if I should have tried to do some work in my own community.
You know, the great thing with all the work you're doing now today, I'm sure you're impacting some life in Chicago with the work you're doing with your books and everything else, your testimony as well, man. Sound like you had some pretty amazing adults around you, man, to really protect you, even though they were involved in criminal elements. Man, they did a lot to kind of shape and guide your future as well, though. So, you know, Dr. Davis, we're coming off a year, man, 2020, where folks have lost loved ones, lost possessions, lost jobs, lost finances, man, lost hope.
Yes.
What words of advice can you give those folks, man, to let them know that a brighter day is to come?
You know what? Honestly, right before I got on this call, I had a presentation. And I'll tell you, one of the biggest things is not to ruminate. Rumination is when an individual consistently dwells on negative stuff.
Mm.
And yes, the pandemic happened. I mean, we're all affected. My business was affected. You know, everybody, like, when I drive around town and I see businesses closed because I'm an entrepreneur business owner, it hurts my heart.
Yeah, absolutely.
But rumination, man, is, you know, when you constantly dwelling on negative stuff. and whatever you give your energies to, it consumes you.
Yeah.
So I am not saying that you should run around and pretend that life is peachy. You know, people talk about optimism and pessimism, but I like to say realism.
Yeah.
You know, it's okay to feel depressed, yeah. right? And I'm not talking about clinical depression because I'm not qualified to speak on that, but I'm talking about those moments where you just feel down and things aren't going your way. You feel discouraged. I always tell people that's normal. Mm-hmm. Allow yourself to feel that. Don't mm-hmm. stay there. Mm-hmm. But when you start ruminating, it kills your motivation. It kills your energy. It yeah. kills your enthusiasm, like your ability to create.
Absolutely.
Right. And yeah. and so, you know, with that said, sometimes people say, well, that's easier said than done. And so honestly, here's what I tell people. Notice when you ruminate. And there's two ways you can do that. If you're good at self-reflection and you're like, oh, I'm going down a slippery slope. Yeah. Or you need to have people who honestly say, hey, you're going down that slippery slope.
Right.
Second thing you got to do is you got to interrupt that. Yeah. And the interruption is you got to replace that. Mm-hmm. Replace that thought, you know, mm-hmm. with something hopeful. Mm-hmm. You know, here's my vision. Here's what I'm thinking about.
Yeah, that's good.
And because hope is the belief that things can get better. Absolutely. If you don't believe that things can get better and you're ruminating, it's a wrap.
Absolutely.
You're going to quit. You're going to stop.
Yeah.
And the last thing, man, is to redirect your efforts, right? So one of those things could be like listening to your podcast.
Yes.
Like the whole essence of resilient stories. I yes. see myself going down a slippery slope. Let me go to Dr. Tommy Watson. Yes. Let me listen to some resilient stories so I can bounce back and get back in the game of life.
Absolutely. Man, great plug as well, man. I appreciate
hey,
that.
Man.
Hey, folks, my good friend, Dr. Jermaine Davis, man, if you're not inspired by his story, man, and again, those individuals that were around you, man, who kind of served as a protective mechanism, man, kudos to them out there as well.
Yes.
So, folks, if you're looking for a speaker, coach, consultant, you got to reach out to my man here. Again, if folks want to get in contact with you, what's the best way to do that?
JermaineDavis.com or Jermaine@JermaineDavis.com.
Man, you got it pretty simple for you, man. Very yeah. simple.
Make it easy.
So, Dr. Davis, we had a chance to talk about some tough stuff. You ready to have some fun?
Oh, yes, yes.
All right. This part of the show is called the Rapid Fire Purpose Questions.
Okay.
I'm going to ask you a number of questions about purpose. I'm not going to elaborate on any of the questions.
Okay.
I simply want you to give me and the audience your best answer.
Okay.
You had your cup of water, so you're good. All right, here we go.
Okay.
Tell us how you have turned a dream into reality.
I've turned a dream into reality. Well, I used to work for Keebler Cookies and Crackers and Frito-Lay. Then I quit. I had saved $10,000, man. And I was like, I need to do something. Remember, I come from a hustling family, mm-hmm. went to college. So here's what I did. I bought 25 vending machines.
Oh, wow, good move.
And I started a company called Snack Attack Vending in Minnesota. And I was saving my money. It took me a while to save this 10 grand.
Huh?
And I started negotiating vending machines. And then I paid a professional locator to teach me how to, you know, get my vending machines into different locations. You know, I went to Sam's Club and I bought the product. And man, I had these 25 machines around Minneapolis and St. Paul. And then one of my mentees, he was going to barbering school. I remember I paid him $20 an hour to service the machine. So if I was on the road speaking, if I was teaching, I hired him. And this was an all cash business. So you had to get somebody you trust, right?
Absolutely.
And man, so I had that from 2003 to 2008 before I sold off everything.
Wow.
You know, but I sat there and I remember going to Barnes & Noble where you and I met.
Yes.
I remember going to Barnes & Noble's trying to look at where can I invest my 10 grand and double, triple, or quadruple my money?
Yes.
And within 18 months later, man, I had made all my money and I had positive cash flow.
Man, yeah. That is beautiful, brother. So yeah. Folks out there, you got to be creative, man. That is, I love it. What gives your life meaning?
Doing meaningful work. You know, sometimes I feel like I'm cheating in life, right? But I didn't just luck up here. You know, I tell people I like to make meaningful money,
yeah.
right? So when I'm speaking, when I'm teaching, when somebody buys my book, that's meaningful money.
Yeah.
And it's a win-win, right? I'm giving to them and I'm being compensated.
Absolutely.
And so when I'm doing meaningful work, it just lights my soul up, man. Like, no one has to tell me to go read a book or go to a workshop myself to keep developing myself. Absolutely. That lights my soul up.
Yeah. If money wasn't an issue, what would you do with your time?
You know, I would do what I'm doing now. I still do pro bono stuff, right? You know, like, it's serious. Like, yes, I get compensated, but if I'm, you know, gifting a time or presentation, I still take that serious. I don't say, oh, they're not paying me, let me just get them a bogus presentation.
Right, absolutely.
Right. So, yeah, I'm gonna do this till I die, man.
I love it. I love it. What one word best describes you?
It shifted, but I'm gonna go back to the one that I used to use in high school and college. Perseverance.
Good. What problem do you want to solve in our world?
I'm passionate about communication. Like, I believe everyone should take one communication class. And I'm talking about a good kick-ass communication class where you learn how to cultivate relationships in all aspects of your life. Mm-hmm. I think communication is a phenomenal tool and gift if you can lean into it.
I love it. What was your favorite thing to do as a kid?
My favorite thing was to watch martial arts movies and go downtown Chicago. It used to be a movie theater called the Mac Victor's. And my mother used to take me there every other Saturday, and we would watch 3 martial art flicks: Into the Dragon, The 5 Fingers of Death, 5 Deadly Venoms. I used to love martial art movies when I was little.
I love it. What do you wish you had more time to do?
To just be, right? Mm-hmm. I became a father later in life, so people are done with flag football. Around my age, now I'm going to flag football. I'm going here. And so sometimes I feel like I'm rushing now. Like, I got to do this. I got to be a father. I got to be a professor. I got to be a speaker. Like, I feel sometimes really fragmented. So sometimes I just want to be.
Yeah. Good for you, man. Congratulations on that right there. Thank you. What is your 15-year-old self imagine you'd be doing right now?
I thought I was going to be a buyer in retail, traveling to New York and Paris and all these exotic places, because I used to think about fashion, and I worked at that shoe store downtown Chicago and that clothing store, and it was high end. The only thing I could afford to buy there was a pair of socks with my discount, but I was around like this classiness. So I was like, I'm going to be a buyer and I'm gonna travel. So I thought I would be in corporate America buying and traveling apparel. Yeah.
Who inspires you the most?
You know, I have some popular people. I'm just going to throw out some names, man. Iyanla Van Zant, Stephen Covey, Les Brown, Booker T. Washington, Zion Davis, my son. That may sound cheesy, but I didn't grow up playing football, man. I played basketball. When I watch him play, I told him, I said, I'm a fan. Like, and he's committed. I mean, he's watching stuff about Walter Payton. That was in my era. He's like, Dad, you know about Walter Payton? I'm like, dude, you're 10. What do you know about Walter Payton? Right. He's studying these people. Like, I get inspired.
I love it. I love it. What's something about yourself we might be surprised to learn about you?
That there's a shy part to who I am. I'm shy at times.
Okay.
Yeah.
What's on your bucket list to do within the next year?
Go to Japan.
Okay. Good. What is something you'll spend your time doing no matter what?
Stand-up comedy.
Okay, good, good.
I love stand-up comedy. Yeah. When I'm on the road speaking, that's one of the things I do. I always look for a comedy club to go laugh.
I love it.
3 hours.
What would you want your grandchildren to say about you?
He broke the cycle.
Yeah, good. If you were a superhero, what would your superpower be?
The ability to eliminate destruction.
What sparks your creativity?
Oh, when I'm in the shower. I don't know why. Whenever I feel nervous, when I'm in the shower, I just creativity, innovative thoughts, book titles, like things come.
Yeah.
Here's how you should open up the speech. No, Jermaine, close out this way.
Yeah, I like that. If you became president today, what law would you pass first?
Ooh, that's good. What law would I pass first? It would be some law around equity. And I know that's huge, but it wouldn't just be equality. It would be something around equity. Mm-hmm. And honestly, I will have different stakeholders at the table to help me really craft that. But something around equity.
That's good. If you could follow someone around for a day, who would it be and why?
This definitely shifts from time to time. That's a good one. I'm gonna go back. I wish I can, if I can unearth my Uncle Ricky.
Yeah.
He gave me a lot of game of life, you know. I didn't say this, but what birthed my speaking career, I had five were shot to death, one was stabbed to death, which was my grandfather. But my Uncle Ricky gave me a lot of insights. Yeah. And I just want to hang out with him now.
Yeah.
Where I am.
Yeah. Sounds amazing guy.
Yeah.
What's been the best gift someone's ever given you?
The gift of helping me see that I'm talented. I had several professors in college. They're like, you got it.
Mm-hmm.
Quit hiding it.
Yeah.
You got it.
Yeah.
Don't you see what I didn't see?
That's good.
Yeah.
What's been the best compliment you've ever received?
You're down to earth.
Okay, good.
That makes me happy. You know how sometimes when you get the doctor in front of your name and I'm happy about that? I want that, but I want people to feel I'm approachable and down to earth.
Absolutely. Very well said. I agree. What's one thing you have never been afraid to do?
Eat my mother's and grandmother's homemade macaroni and cheese.
Great answer.
Never. I was like, I'm waiting.
Since on my way. What moment from your childhood are you most proud of?
You know, going for things, you know, trying out for the basketball team, trying out to be captain of patrol, right? Trying out for the scholarships, even though I had doubt, like I did it still, like I gave it a shot.
Right.
Yeah, right. I'm proud of that. Like moving to Superior, Wisconsin from Chicago, and I never visited it.
Right.
And moving to I had this thing like, man, just try it, give it a shot.
Yeah.
And so I look back at that, I'm proud of myself that I didn't allow my fears to prevent me from giving things a shot.
That's good. I like it. I love it. What does success look like for you?
You know what? I've changed my definition of success. I will be honest and transparent. I used to have the Hollywood definition of success.
True.
Right? When you think, I want the big house and luxurious cars. Don't get me wrong. It's nothing wrong with having nice things. But I was chasing someone else's definition of success. And then I had to recalibrate. And to me, my definition of success is what I deem as significant.
Yes.
For me, yes. Right? I had a kid when I was 38.
Yeah.
I wasn't ready at 28.
Right.
Right?
Yeah.
I was ready at 38.
Yeah.
And so, you know, people, you know, quote Frank Sinatra when he says, I did it my way.
Yeah.
But in a sense, like, I use my definition of success instead of following other people's definition of success.
Love it. Very, very well said. For the people who know you best, what would they say your purpose is in life?
And inspire people to do what they do best, whatever what they decide to do best. That's the thing. Like, I tell you, it's my buddy, he owns a barbershop, and he would tell me sometimes the most toughest dude who doesn't emote, when I leave, they'll say, hey man, what's that dude's name? And man, you think that guy talked to me?
Yeah.
Right. And he said, sometimes these are the thugs of the thugs.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like that relatability, man, I just want to inspire people to become better, living their purpose.
I love it. I love it. What's been your biggest lesson you have learned in life?
Shut my damn mouth and learn how to listen.
Yes, yes.
Learn how to listen, man. I can't tell it here, but there's a story I tell about my brother who was in a gang, and you know, he died tragically. But before he died, he didn't talk to me for 3 years because I was in my judgment.
Wow.
And I was, you know, just on him, you know, like big brother, you know, you listen to me, you know, you're making stupid choices. Yeah. You know, you're a teenage father. You're not a good example to my nephew, your son. And I was on him and he pulled away. And so I learned, man, you have to connect before you correct.
Yeah.
And I was just trying to use my big brother privilege. And 18 months before he passed, we reconnected. And I'll never forget, he told me this. He says, JD, I just wanted you to listen. Wow. He told me the story. He says, I made a decision at the age of 12 that I don't know how to get out of at 21.
Wow.
And he says, all I wanted you to do was listen.
Wow.
And that taught me a lot. That's my biggest lesson. Learn how to listen.
That's profound. That's good.
Yeah.
And then last but not least, Dr. JD, how do you want to be remembered in history?
You know what? He gave, like, you can tell he wanted you to be better.
Yeah.
You know, even if I have to, you know, when I open up my life story and I share with people, sometimes, you know, people say, man, I can't believe you shared that. And I said, listen, I want people to have breakthroughs. Absolutely. And if I'm standing in my comfort zone and I'm making myself look gorgeous and pretty,
right,
I'm robbing you of your potential breakthrough.
Absolutely.
And so he kept it real.
Yeah.
Down to earth.
I love it.
Yes.
Dr. JD, you survived. Brother, give yourself a round of applause, man. Hey, great job, man. Great job, brother. Hey, great Thank information, you. Great advice. Folks, I hope you're pumped up and inspired by hearing Dr. JD's story, man. Great guy, great friend of mine. Dr. JD, so as we go to wrap things up here, there's two focuses of our podcast.
Yes.
Focus on purpose and resiliency.
Yes.
What last words can you leave us with around those two themes?
I'm going to leave you with the African proverb. If there is no enemy within, the enemy without can do you no harm. Mm. Don't self-sabotage. I mean, don't get me wrong. There are external factors. But if there's external factors and barriers, and then you're also hurting yourself, you can't thrive. You can't be resilient. You can't detect your purpose.
Yes.
Because you're crushing from the inside out.
Yes. Very well said, man. Great advice there as well.
Thank you, brother.
So, Doc, if people want to get a hold of you, what's the best way to get a hold of you one more time?
You know, you can reach me at JermaineDavis.com or Jermaine@JermaineDavis.com. And I look forward to hearing from you.
Get out there and get his books. Bring him in as a speaker, coach, consultant. You couldn't go wrong with that, though. So, folks, if you are someone out there who has a story of overcoming, we want to hear from you. Please go to tawatson.com and share your story. Subscribe to our podcast, Resilient Stories. Download it, rate it, share with your folks on social media. And again, Dr. Jermaine Davis, man, I can't thank you enough, brother, for coming out and being courageous and sharing your story. It's been powerful. I'm sure it's going to bless a lot of folks out there as well. Folks, if you're listening, man, again, thanks for tuning in. God bless you. Peace.
Yours truly. Jesus. Dr. Watson.